from her. Sometimes they had something for her to read or write. She would always ask where they were from and what it was like there, so she could have something new to tell her family when she went home. Sometimes they told her about the weather. Sometimes they told of the beautiful mountains or the fields of opium poppies blooming into flower, or the orchards heavy with fruit. Sometimes they told her of the war, of battles they had seen and people they had lost. Parvana remembered it all to tell her family when she got home. Through Mother's and Mrs. Weera's women's group, a secret little school was started. Nuria was the teacher. The Taliban would close down any school they discovered, so Nuria and Mrs. Weera were very careful. This school held only 5 girls, including Mariam. They were all around her age. They were taught in 2 different groups, never at the same time, 2 days running. Sometimes the students came to Nuria, sometimes Nuria went to the students. Sometimes Parvana was her escort. Sometimes she carried a squirming Ali. "He's getting too big to be carried around," Nuria said to Parvana on one of their noonday walks. Mother had allowed Nuria to leave Ali at home to get a break from him. They only had Mariam with them, and she was no trouble. "How are your students doing?" "They can't learn much in a few hours a week," Nuria replied, "and we don't have any books or school supplies. Still, I guess it's better than nothing." The little gifts from the window kept landing on Parvana's blanket every couple of weeks. Sometimes it was a piece of embroidery, sometimes it was a piece of candy or a single bead. It was as if the window woman was saying, "I'm still here," in the only way she could. Parvana checked carefully around her blanket every time she went to leave the market, in case one of the gifts had rolled off. One afternoon she heard sounds coming from above her. A man was very angry. He was shouting at a woman who was crying and screaming. Parvana heard thuds and more screams. Without thinking, she sprang to her feet and looked up at the window, but she couldn't see anything through the painted glass. "What goes on in a man's house is his own business," a voice behind her said. She spun around to see a man holding out an envelope. "Forget about that and turn your mind to your own business. I have a letter for you to read." She was planning to tell her family about the whole incident that night, but she didn't get the chance. Instead, her family had something to tell her. "You'll never guess," her mother said. "Nuria's getting married." Chapter 13.
"But you've never even met him," Parvana exclaimed to Nuria the next day at noon.
It was the first chance they'd had to talk about it, just the two of them.
"Of course I've met him. His family and ours were neighbours for many years." "But that was when he was a boy. I thought you wanted to go back to school."
"I will be going back to school," Nuria said. "Didn't you listen to anything Mother was saying last night?
I'll be living in Mazar-i-Sharif in the north. The Taliban aren't in that part of Afghanistan. Girls can still go to school there. Both of his parents are educated. I can finish school, and they'll even send me to the university in Mazar."
All of this was written in a letter that had arrived while Parvana was out at work. The women in the groom's family belonged to the same women's group as Mother. The letter had passed from one member of the group to another until it finally reached Mother. Parvana had read the letter, but she still had a lot of questions.
"Do you really want to do this?"
Nuria nodded.
"Look at my life here, Parvana. I hate living under the Taliban. I'm tired of looking after their little ones. My school classes happen so seldom, they're of almost no value. There's no future for me here. At least in Mazar I can go to school, walk the streets without having to wear a burqa, and get a job when I've completed school. Maybe in Mazar I can have some kind of life. Yes, I want to do this."
There was a lot of discussion in the following few days about what would happen next. Parvana, out at work, had no voice in these discussions. She was merely informed of the plans when she got home in the evening.
"We'll go to Mazar for the wedding," Mother announced. "We can all stay with your aunt while the wedding is prepared. Then Nuria will go to live with her new family. We will return to Kabul in October."
"We can't leave Kabul," Parvana exclaimed. "What about Father?
What will happen if he gets out of prison and we're not here? He won't know where to look for us.
I'll be here, Mrs. Weira said. I can tell your father where you are and look after him until you get back.
I'm not sending Nuria off to Mazar all by herself, Mother said. And since you are a child, you will come with us.
I'm not going,
Parvana insisted. She even stamped her feet.
You will do as you're told, Mother said. All this running around wild in the streets has made you think you're above yourself.
I'm not going to Mazar, Parvana repeated, stamping her feet again.
Since your feet want to move around so much, you'd better take them out for a walk, Mrs. Weira said. You can fetch some water while you're at it.
Parvana grabbed the bucket and got some satisfaction out of slamming the door behind her. Parvana glowered for 3 days. Finally, Mother said, You can take that awful frown off your face. We've decided to leave you here. Not because of your bad behavior. A child of 11 has no business telling her mother what she will and will not do. We're leaving you here because it will be too difficult to explain your appearance. Your aunt will keep your secret, of course, but we can't count on everyone to be so careful. We can't take the chance of word about you getting back here. Although she was glad to remain in Kabul, Parvana found herself sulking that they weren't taking her with them.
I'm not satisfied with anything anymore, she told Shazia the next day.
Neither am I, Shazia said. I used to think that if only I could sell things from a tray, I'd be happy. But I'm not happy at all. I make more money this way than I did as a tea boy, but it's not enough to make any real difference. We still go hungry. My family still argues all the time. Nothing is better.
What's the answer?
Maybe someone should drop a big bomb on the country and start again. They've tried that, Parvana said. It only made things worse.
One of the women in the local branch of the women's group was going to accompany Parvana's family to the city of Mazar. Her husband would go with them as the official escort. If the Taliban asked, Mother would be the husband's sister, and Nuria, Mariam, and Ali would be the nieces and nephews. Nuria cleaned out the family cupboard one last time. Parvana watched her pack up her things.
If all goes well, we'll be in Mazar in a couple of days, Nuria said.
Are you scared? Parvana asked. It's a long journey.
I keep thinking of things that can go wrong, but Mother says everything will be fine.
They would be travelling together in the back of a truck.
As soon as I get out of Taliban territory, I'm going to throw off my burqa and tear it into a million pieces.
Parvana went to the market the next day to buy the family some food for the journey. She wanted to buy Nuria a present, too. She wandered through the market looking at things for sale. She finally decided on a pen in a beaded case. Every time Nuria used it at university, and later when she became a real schoolteacher, she would think of Parvana.
We'll be gone for most of the summer, Mother reminded Parvana the night before they left. You'll be fine with Mrs. Weira. Do what she tells you and don't give her any trouble.
Parvana and I will be good company for each other, Mrs. Weira said. And by the time you get back, the magazine should be coming in from Pakistan all printed and ready to distribute.
They left very early the next day. The mid-July morning was fresh, but held the promise of hot weather to follow.
We'd best be going, Mother said.
Since there was no one else on the street, Mother, Nuria, and Mrs. Weira had their burqas flipped up so their faces could be seen. Parvana kissed Ali, who squirmed and fussed, grumpy from being woken up early. Mother got him settled on the floor of the truck. Parvana said goodbye to Mariam after that, then lifted her into the truck.
We will see you by the middle of September, Mother said, as she hugged Parvana. Make me proud of you.
I will, Parvana said, trying not to cry. I don't know when we'll see each other again,
Nuria said just before she climbed into the truck. She had Parvana's gift clutched in her hand.
It won't be long,
Parvana said, grinning, even though tears fell from her eyes.
As soon as your new husband realizes how bossy you are, he'll send you back to Kabul as fast as he can.
Nuria laughed and climbed into the truck. She and Mother covered themselves with their burqas. The women's group member and her husband were sitting in the front seat. Parvana and Mrs. Weira watched and waved as the truck drove out of sight.
I think we could both use a cup of tea, Mrs. Weera said, and they went upstairs.
Parvana found the next few weeks to be a strange time. With only herself, Mrs. Weera, and Mrs. Weera's grandchild, the apartment seemed almost empty. Fewer people meant fewer chores, less noise, and more free time. Parvana even missed Ali's fussing. As the weeks went by, she looked forward more and more to everyone coming back. Still, she did enjoy having more free time. For the first time since father's arrest, she took his books out of their secret place in the cupboard. Evenings were spent reading and listening to Mrs. Weera's stories. Mrs. Weera believed in trusting her.
In some parts of the country, girls your age are getting married and having babies, she said. I'm here if you need me, but if you want to be responsible for yourself, that's fine too.
She insisted that Parvana keep some of her wages as pocket money. Sometimes Parvana would treat Shazia to lunch at one of the kebab stands in the market. They'd find a sheltered place to go to the bathroom and keep working all day. Parvana preferred to come home at the end of the day, rather than at noon. It meant that one more day was over, and her family would soon be home. Toward the end of August, there was a bad rainstorm. Shazia had already gone home. She had seen the darkening sky and didn't feel like getting wet. Parvana wasn't so clever, and she got caught in the rain. She covered her tray with her arms to keep her cigarettes dry and ducked into a bombed-out building. She would wait out the storm there and go home when it was over. The darkness outside made the inside even blacker. It took a while for her eyes to adjust. While she waited for that to happen, she leaned against the doorway, watching the rain turn Kabul's dust into mud. Gusts of wind mixed with driving rain forced Parvana deeper inside the building. Hoping there were no landmines, she found a dry spot and sat down. The pounding of the rain beat a steady rhythm as it hit the ground. Parvana began to nod. In a little while, she was asleep. When she woke up, the rain had stopped, although the sky was no lighter. "It must be late," Parvana said out loud. It was then that she heard the sound of a woman crying. Chapter 14. The sound was too soft and too sad to be startling.
"Hello?"
Parvana called out, not too loudly. It was too dark to see where the woman was sitting. Parvana rummaged around on her tray until she found a box of the matches she sold with the cigarettes. She struck one, and the light flared up. She held the flame out in front of her, looking for the crying woman. It took three matches before she saw the figure huddled against the nearby wall. She kept striking matches so she could see as she made her way over to the woman.
"What's your name?"
Parvana asked. The woman kept crying.
"I'll tell you my name then. It's Parvana. I should tell you that my name is Kasim, because I'm pretending to be a boy. I'm dressed like a boy so that I can earn some money, but I'm really a girl. So now you know my secret."
The woman said nothing. Parvana glanced out the door. It was getting late. If she was going to be home before curfew, she'd have to leave now.
"Come with me," Parvana said. "My mother is away, but Mrs. Weera is at home. She can fix any problem."
She struck another match and held it up to the woman's face. It suddenly dawned on her that she could see the woman's face. It wasn't covered up.
"Where is your burqa?"
She looked around but couldn't see one.
"Are you outside without a burqa?"
The woman nodded.
"What are you doing outside without a burqa? You could get in a lot of trouble for that."
The woman just shook her head.
Parvana had an idea. "Here's what we'll do. I'll go home and borrow Mrs. Weera's burqa and bring it back to you. Then we'll go back to my place together. All right?"
Parvana started to stand up, but the woman grabbed onto her arm. Again, Parvana looked out the door at the coming night.
"I have to let Mrs. Weera know where I am. She's fine with me being out during the day, but if I'm not back at night, she'll be worried."
Still, the woman did not let go. Parvana didn't know what to do. She couldn't stay in the building all night, but this frightened woman clearly did not want to be left alone. Groping in the dark for her tray, she found two little bags of dried fruit and nuts.
"Here," she said, handing one to the woman. "We'll think better if we eat."
The woman downed the fruit and nuts in almost one swallow.
"You must be starving," Parvana said, passing her another bag.
Parvana chewed and thought and finally decided what to do.
"This is the best suggestion I have," she said. "If you have a better idea, let me know. Otherwise, this is what we'll do. We'll wait until it gets very, very dark, then we'll head back to my place together. Do you have a chadar?"
The woman shook her head. Parvana wished she had her pakul, but it was summer, so she had left it at home.
"Do you agree?" Parvana asked.
The woman nodded.
"Good. I think we should move close to the door. That way, when it's time, we can see our way out to the street without lighting a match. I don't want to draw any attention to us."
With a bit of gentle pulling, Parvana got the woman to her feet. Carefully, they made their way to a spot just inside the door, but still hidden from the view of anyone passing by. They waited in silence for night to fall. Kabul was a dark city at night. It had been under curfew for more than 20 years. Many of the street lights had been knocked out by bombs, and many of those still standing did not work. Kabul was the hot spot of Central Asia, Parvana's mother and father used to say. "We used to walk down the streets at midnight eating ice cream. Earlier in the evening we would browse through bookshops and record stores. It was a city of lights, progress and excitement." Parvana could not even imagine what it had looked like then. Before long, it was as dark as it would get.
"Stay right with me," Parvana said, although she needn't have bothered.
The woman was gripping her hand tightly.
"It's not far, but I don't know how long it will take us tonight. Don't worry."
She smiled, pretending to be brave. She knew it was too dark in the doorway for the woman to see her smile, but it made Parvana feel better.
"I'm Malalai, leading the troops through enemy territory," she murmured to herself.
That helped too, although it was hard to feel like a battle heroine with a cigarette tray hanging around her neck. The narrow, winding streets of the marketplace were very different in the dark. Parvana could hear their footsteps echo along the narrow corridors. She was about to tell the woman to walk more softly, that the Taliban had made it a crime for women to make noise when they walked, but she changed her mind. If the Taliban caught them out after curfew, and with a woman without a burqa or a head covering at all, the noise they were making would be the least of their problems. Parvana remembered the scene in the stadium. She didn't want to know what the Taliban would do to her and her companion. Parvana saw headlights approaching and pulled the woman into another doorway until the truck filled with soldiers moved on down the street. Several times they almost tripped on the uneven pavement. For one long, heart-stopping minute, Parvana thought she was lost. Finally, she got her bearings and they kept moving. When they got to Parvana's street, she started to run, and she pulled the woman along with her. She was so scared by this point, she thought if she didn't get home right away, she would collapse.
"You're back!"
Mrs. Weera was so relieved, she hugged both Parvana and the woman before she realized what she was doing.
"You've brought someone with you. You are very welcome here, my dear."
She took a critical look at the woman.
"Parvana, you didn't bring her through the streets like that, with no burqa?"
Parvana explained what had happened.
"I think she's in trouble," she said.
Mrs. Weera didn't hesitate. She put her arm around the woman.
"We'll get the details later. There's warm water for you to wash in, and hot food for supper. You don't look much older than Parvana."
Parvana took a good look at her companion. She hadn't seen the woman in the light before. She looked a little bit younger than Nuria.
"Fetch me some clean clothes," Mrs. Weera told Parvana.
Parvana took a shalwar kameez of mother's out of the cupboard, and Mrs. Weera took the young woman into the washroom and closed the door. Parvana restocked her tray for the next day, then spread the meal cloth out on the floor. By the time she had put out the naan and the cups for tea, Mrs. Weera emerged from the washroom with their guest. Dressed in mother's clean clothes, her hair washed and pulled back, the woman looked less scared and more tired. She managed to drink half a cup of tea and eat a few mouthfuls of rice before she fell asleep. She was still sleeping when Parvana left for work the next morning.
"Fetch me some water, please, dear," Mrs. Weira asked before Parvana went off to the market. "That poor girl's clothes need washing."
Finally, that night, after eating supper, the girl was able to talk.
"My name is Homa," she said. "I escaped from Mazar-e Sharif just after the Taliban captured the city."
"The Taliban has captured Mazar?" Parvana exclaimed.
"That can't be. My mother is there. My brother and sisters are there."
"The Taliban is in Mazar," Homa repeated. "They went from house to house looking for enemies. They came to my house. They came right inside. They grabbed my father and my brother and took them outside. They shot them right in the street. My mother started hitting them and they shot her too. I ran back inside and hid in a closet. I was there for a long, long time. I thought they would kill me too. But they were finished killing people at my house. They were busy killing at other houses. Finally, I left the closet and went downstairs. There were bodies all over the street. Some soldiers drove by in a truck. They forbade us to move the bodies of our families or even cover them up. They said we must stay inside. I was so scared they would come back for me. When it got dark, I ran outside. I ran from building to building, looking out for the soldiers. There were bodies everywhere. The wild dogs had started eating some of the bodies, so there were pieces of people on the sidewalks and in the streets. I even saw a dog carrying a person's arm in its mouth. I couldn't face anything else. There was a truck stopped on the street. Its motor was running. I jumped into the back and hid among the bundles. Wherever the truck was going, it couldn't be worse than where I was. We travelled a long, long time. When I finally got out, I was in Kabul. I went from the truck to the building where Parvana found me."
Homa started to cry.
"I just left them there. I left my mother and my father and my brother lying in the street for the dogs to eat."
Mrs. Weira put her arms around Homa, but the girl could not be comforted. She cried until she collapsed into an exhausted sleep. Parvana couldn't move. She couldn't speak. All she could do was picture her mother, sisters, and brother, dead in the streets of a strange city.
"There's no evidence your family is hurt, Parvana," Mrs. Weira said. "Your mother is a smart, strong woman, and so is Nuria. We must believe they are alive. We must not give up hope."
Parvana was fresh out of hope. She did what her mother had done. She crawled onto the toshak, covered herself with a quilt, and resolved to stay there forever. For 2 days she stayed on the toshak.
"This is what the women in our family do when we're sad," she said to Mrs. Weira.
"They don't stay there forever," Mrs. Weira said. "They get up again and they fight back."
Parvana didn't answer her. She didn't want to get up again. She was tired of fighting back. Mrs. Weira was gentle with her at first, but she had her hands full with Homa and her grandchild. Late in the afternoon of the second day, Shauzia showed up at Parvana's door.
"I am very glad to see you," Mrs. Weira said, nodding toward Parvana.
They went out onto the landing to speak for a moment out of Parvana's earshot. Then they came back in, and after fetching a couple of buckets of water, Shauzia sat down on the toshak beside Parvana. She talked about ordinary things for a while, how her sales had been, people she'd seen in the market, conversations she'd had with some of the tea boys and other working boys. Finally, she said,
"I don't like working alone. The marketplace isn't the same when you're not there. Won't you come back?"
Put to her like that, Parvana knew she could not refuse. She'd known all along that she would have to get up. She wasn't really about to stay on that toshak until she died. Part of her wanted to slip away from everything, but another part wanted to get up and stay alive and continue to be Shauzia's friend. With a little prodding from Shauzia, that was the part that won.
Parvana got out of bed and carried on as before. She did her work in the market, fetched water, listened to Mrs. Weira's stories, and got to know Homer. She did all these things because she didn't know what else to do. But she moved through her days as though she were moving through an awful nightmare, a nightmare from which there was no release in the morning. Then, late one afternoon, Parvana came home from work to find two men gently helping her father up the steps to the apartment. He was alive. At least part of the nightmare was over. Chapter 15. The man who came back from prison was barely recognizable, but Parvana knew who he was. Although his white shalwar kameez was now grey and tattered, although his face was drawn and pale, he was still her father. Parvana clung to him so tightly she had to be pulled away by Mrs. Weira so that her father could lie down.
"We found him on the ground outside the prison," one of the men who had brought him home said to Mrs. Weira. "The Taliban released him, but he was unable to go anywhere on his own. He told us where he lived, so my friend and I put him on our Karachi and brought him here."
Parvana was down on the toshak with her father, clinging to him and weeping. She knew that the men stayed to tea, but it wasn't until they were getting up to leave to make it back to their homes before curfew that she remembered her manners. She got to her feet.
"Thank you for bringing my father back," she said.
The men left. Parvana started to lie back down beside her father, but Mrs. Weira stopped her.
"Let him rest. There will be time to talk tomorrow."
Parvana obeyed, but it took days of Mrs. Weira's careful nursing before father even started to get well. Most of the time he was too ill and weary to talk. He coughed a lot.
"That prison must have been cold and damp," Mrs. Weira said.
Parvana helped her make a broth and fed it to her father hot, off a spoon, until he was able to sit up and eat.
"Now you are both my daughter and my son," father said when he was well enough to notice her new appearance.
He rubbed his hand over her cropped hair and smiled.
Parvana made many trips to the water tap. Father had been beaten badly, and the poultice bandages Mrs. Weira put over his wounds had to be changed and washed frequently. Homer helped too, mostly by keeping Mrs. Weira's granddaughter quiet so father could rest. Parvana didn't mind that he was unable to talk right away. She was overjoyed just to have him home. She spent her days earning money and her evenings helping Mrs. Weira. When her father felt better, she would read to him from his books. Homer knew some English from studying it in school, and one day Parvana came home from work to hear Homer and father talking English to each other. Homer hesitated a lot, but father's words flowed smoothly into each other.
"Did you bring us home another educated woman today?" father asked Parvana, smiling.
"No, father," Parvana replied. "I just brought home onions." For some reason, everyone thought that was funny, and there was laughter in Parvana's home for the first time since her father's arrest. One thing in her life had been repaired. Her father was home now. Maybe the rest of the family would come back too. Parvana was filled with hope. In the market, she chased after customers just like the real boys did. Mrs. Weira suggested some medicine for father, and Parvana worked and worked until she had earned the money to buy it. It seemed to help.
"I feel like I'm working for something now," she told Shaozia one day as they walked around looking for customers. "I'm working to get my family back."
"I'm working for something too," Shaozia said. "I'm working to get away from Afghanistan."
"Won't you miss your family?" Parvana asked.
"My grandfather has started to look for a husband for me," Shaozia replied. "I overheard him talking to my grandmother. He said I should get married soon, that since I'm so young, I'll fetch a good bride price, and they will have lots of money to live on."
"Won't your mother stop him?"
"What could she do? She has to live with them. She has nowhere else to go."
Shaozia stopped walking and looked at Parvana.
"I can't be married."
"I won't be married."
"How will your mother manage without you there? How will she eat?"
"What can I do?"
Shazia asked, the question coming out as a wail. If I stay here and get married, my life will be over. If I leave, maybe I'll have a chance. There must be some place in this world where I can live. Am I wrong to think like this? She wiped the tears from her face. What else can I do? Parvana didn't know how to comfort her friend. One day, Mrs. Weera had a visitor, a member of the women's group who had just come out of Mazar. Parvana was at work, but father told her about the visit that evening.
A lot of people have fled Mazar, he said. They are staying in refugee camps outside the city.
Is that where Mother is?
It's possible. We won't know unless we go to the camps and look.
How can we do that? Are you well enough to travel?
I will never be well enough, father said, but we should go anyway.
When do we leave? Parvana asked.
As soon as I can arrange transport. Can you carry a message for me to the men who brought me home from prison? I think, with their help, we can be on our way in a couple of weeks.
Parvana had been wanting to ask her father something for a while. Why did the Taliban let you go?
I don't know why they arrested me. How would I know why they let me go?
Parvana would have to be satisfied with that for an answer. Her life was about to change again. She was surprised at how calm she felt. She decided it was because her father was back. We'll find them, Parvana said with complete confidence. We'll find them and bring them home.
Mrs. Weera was going to Pakistan. Homa will come with me. We'll put her to work there.
They were going to link up with the members of the women's group who were organizing Afghan women in exile. Where will you stay?
I have a cousin in one of the camps, Mrs. Weera replied. She has been wanting me to come and live with her.
Is there a school there?
If there isn't, we'll start one. Life is very difficult for Afghans in Pakistan. There is a lot of work to do.
Parvana had an idea. Take Shazia with you.
Shazia?
She wants to leave. She hates it here. Couldn't she go with you? She could be your escort.
Shazia has family here. Do you mean to say she would just leave her family? Desert the team just because the game is rough?
Parvana said no more. In a way, Mrs. Weera was right. That was what Shazia was doing. But Shazia was also right. Didn't she have a right to seek out a better life? Parvana couldn't decide who was more right. A few days before they were to leave for Mazar, Parvana was sitting on her blanket in the marketplace when something hit her on the head. It was a tiny camel made out of beads. The window woman was still alive. She was all right, or at least well enough to let Parvana know she was still there. Parvana wanted to jump up and down and dance. She wanted to yell and wave at the painted window. Instead, she sat quietly and tried to think of a way to say goodbye. She was almost home that afternoon when she thought of a way. Heading back to the market after lunch, she carefully dug up some wildflowers that were growing among the bombed-out ruins. She had seen them growing there in other years and hoped she was right in thinking they were the kind that grew year after year. If she planted the flowers in the spot where she usually put her blanket, the window woman would know she wasn't coming back. The flowers would be something pretty to look at. She hoped they would make a good present. In her spot in the market, Parvana dug up the hard soil, first by pounding into it with her ankle. She used her hands too, as well as a rock she found nearby. The men and boys in the market gathered around to watch her. Anything different was entertainment. Those flowers won't grow in that soil, someone said. There are no nutrients in it. Even if they grow, they will be trampled. The marketplace is no spot for flowers. Why are you planting them there? Through the voices of derision came another voice.
Do none of you appreciate nature? This boy has undertaken to bring a bit of beauty into our grey marketplace. And do you thank him? Do you help him?
An old man pushed his way to the front of the little gathering. With difficulty, he knelt down to help Parvana plant the flowers.
Afghans love beautiful things, he said. But we have seen so much ugliness. We sometimes forget how wonderful a thing like a flower is.
He asked one of the tea boys hovering nearby for some water from the tea shop. It was fetched, and he poured it around the flowers, soaking the earth around them. The plants had wilted. They didn't stand up properly.
Are they dead? Parvana asked.
No, no, not dead. They may look scraggly and dying now, he said. But the roots are good. When the time is right, these roots will support plants that are healthy and strong.
He gave the earth a final pat, and Parvana and one of the others helped him up. He smiled once more at Parvana, then walked away. Parvana waited by her flowers until the crowd had gone. When she was sure no one was watching, she looked up at the window and waved a quick goodbye. She wasn't sure, but she thought she saw someone wave back. 2 days later, they were ready to leave. They were going to travel by truck, just as the rest of the family had done.
Am I traveling as your son or your daughter? Parvana asked father.
You decide, he said. Either way, you will be my little Malalai.
Look at what's here, Mrs. Weera said.
After making sure the coast was clear, she took several copies of Mother's magazine out from under her burqa.
Isn't it beautiful?
Parvana flipped through the magazine quickly before hiding it again.
It's wonderful, she said.
Tell your mother that copies are being sent out to women all over the world. She has helped to let the world know what is happening in Afghanistan. Be sure you tell her that. What she did was very important. And tell her we need her back to work on the next issue.
I'll tell her.
She gave Mrs. Weera a hug. Both Mrs. Weera and Homa were wearing burqas, but she could tell by hugging them who was who. It was time to leave. Suddenly, just as the truck was ready to pull out onto the road, Shalzia appeared.
You made it,
Parvana said, hugging her friend.
Goodbye, Parvana,
Shalzia said. She handed Parvana a bag of dried apricots.
I'm leaving soon, too.
I met some nomads who will take me to Pakistan as a shepherd. I'm not waiting until next spring. It would be too lonely here without you.
Parvana didn't want to say goodbye.
When will we see each other again? She asked in a panic. How will we keep in touch?
I've got it all figured out, Shazia said. We'll meet again on the first day of spring 20 years from now.
All right. Where?
The top of the Eiffel Tower in Paris. I told you I was going to France.
Parvana laughed.
I'll be there, she said.
We won't say goodbye then. We'll just say, so long for now.
Until next time, Shazia said.
Parvana hugged her friend one last time, then climbed into the truck. They waved to each other as the truck rolled away. 20 years from now, Parvana thought. What would happen in those 20 years? Would she still be in Afghanistan? Would Afghanistan finally have peace? Would she go back to school, have a job, be married? The future stretched unknown down the road in front of her. Her mother was somewhere ahead with her sisters and her brother. But what else they would find, Parvana had no idea. Whatever it was, she felt ready for it. She even found herself looking forward to it. Parvana settled back in the truck beside her father. She popped a dried apricot into her mouth and rolled its sweetness around on her tongue. Through the dusty front windshield, she could see Mount Parvana, the snow on its peak, sparkling in the sun.
Hello, this is Deborah Ellis. A few years ago, I spent several months in Pakistan and Russia talking with women and girls in Afghan refugee camps. During my stay, I met the mother and sister of a girl in Kabul who cut off her hair, put on boys' clothes, and sold things off a tray in the marketplace to support her family. This reminded me of the enormous capabilities of children for acts of courage and creative survival during times when most of the adult world is conspiring to stifle their futures. It also inspired me to write this book. Afghanistan is a small country in Central Asia. It contains the Hindu Kush mountain range, fast-flowing rivers, and golden deserts. Its fertile valleys used to produce an abundance of fruit, wheat, and vegetables. Conquerors and explorers throughout history have seen Afghanistan as a gateway to the Far East. Afghanistan has been at war since 1978, when American-backed fighters opposed the Soviet-backed government. In 1980, the Soviet Union invaded Afghanistan, and the war escalated, with both sides bombing and killing with modern weapons. After the Soviets left in 1989, a civil war erupted as various groups fought for control of the country. Millions of Afghans became refugees, and many still live in huge camps in Pakistan, Iran, and Russia. Many people have spent their whole lives in these camps. Millions have been killed, maimed, or blinded. The Taliban militia and Afghan army took over control of the capital city of Kabul in September of 1996. They imposed extremely restrictive laws on girls and women. Schools for girls were closed down. Women were no longer allowed to hold jobs, and strict dress codes were enforced. Books were burned, televisions smashed, and music in any form was forbidden. The Taliban massacred thousands of their opponents, many of them civilians, and put many others in prison. Many people simply disappeared, and their families may never know what happened to them. Although the Taliban is no longer in power in Afghanistan, 20 years of war have left the country in terrible shape. Infrastructure such as bridges, roads, and electrical plants have been destroyed. Few people in Afghanistan have clean water to drink. All the armies put landmines into farmers' fields, making it impossible to grow food there. As a consequence, many people die of hunger or from diseases caused by poor nutrition. The greatest hope for Afghanistan is that the schools have reopened and all children, boys and girls, now have a chance at education. The terrible poverty and destruction in the country means that they need help from people around the world to build schools and provide basic supplies. With that help, they can rebuild their lives and start to hope again.
Glossary. Burqa, a long tent-like garment which the Taliban have decreed women must wear whenever they go outside. It covers them completely and even has a narrow mesh screen over the eyes. Chador, a piece of cloth worn by women and girls to cover their hair and shoulders. Girls wear this outside. Dari, one of the two main languages spoken in Afghanistan. Eid, a Muslim festival coming at the end of Ramadan, the month of fasting. Karachi, a cart on wheels pushed by hand, used to sell things in the market. Kebab, pieces of meat on a skewer, cooked over a fire. Landmine, a bomb planted in the ground, which explodes if it is stepped on. Naan, Afghan bread, flat, sometimes long and sometimes round. Pakul, a grey or brown woolen blanket shawl worn by Afghan men and boys. Pashto, one of the two main languages spoken in Afghanistan. Shalwar kameez, long loose shirt and trousers, worn by both men and women. Men's are all one colour, with pockets in the side and on the chest. Women's are different colours and patterns, sometimes elaborately embroidered or beaded. Soviets. The Soviet Union before its breakup, including Russia and other communist countries. Taliban. Members of the ruling party in Afghanistan. Toshak. A narrow mattress used in many Afghan homes instead of chairs or beds. This is Rita Wolf. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of The Breadwinner by Deborah Ellis. This program was produced and directed by Charles Potter. Executive producer, Orly Moskowitz. Text copyright 2000 by Deborah Ellis. Production copyright 2002, Random House, Inc. All rights reserved.
Audible Kids hopes you have enjoyed this audiobook.
For more like it, check out kids.audible.com.